All right, so today we're looking at some pretty intense material from the Book of Revelation,
Yeah.
specifically chapters 5 and 6.
Yeah, some really fascinating stuff in those chapters.
Yeah, you've given us lectures and some excerpts all focusing on those two chapters. And honestly, just skimming through it gave me chills.
Yeah.
This is all about, worthiness and divine power and, all that apocalyptic mystery that Revelation is so famous for.
It's interesting how these chapters take these familiar symbols, like the lamb in the temple,
Right.
and weave them into this huge cosmic drama. It's
Yeah.
like watching the universe get rearranged.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
But for someone who hasn't cracked open the Book of Revelation lately, what's actually going on in chapters 5 and 6?
Well, chapter 5 opens with John's vision of heaven, and he sees a sealed scroll.
Okay.
And this scroll represents God's plan for the future. And the big question is, who is worthy to open it?
Right.
And no one seems to fit the bill until the Lamb, who we understand as Jesus steps forward.
But hold on a second.
Yeah.
Earlier, it mentions a lion,
Right.
right? The Lion of Judah.
Right.
And then suddenly it's a lamb. What's with this switch?
That's one of the most powerful things about this whole scene is, you expect this ferocious lion,
Right.
the symbol of conquering power, but instead you get a lamb,
Right.
showing that Jesus's power isn't about brute force, it's about sacrifice.
Okay.
This imagery ties back to the Passover lamb and the suffering servant in Isaiah,
I see.
and so it completely flips the script on what true power really looks like.
Yeah, it really makes you rethink that whole concept of power, doesn't it?
Absolutely,
It's
man.
not about dominance, it's about selflessness.
Right.
That's a pretty profound message.
It really is.
And it goes even deeper than that, right? This scene isn't actually about enthronement, like Jesus being crowned king.
Right.
It's more like he's being invested with the authority to carry out God's plan.
Exactly.
And this links back to the book of Daniel, right? Where the Son of Man receives the kingdom from God.
That's right.
And the lectures mentioned golden bowls full of incense in this scene.
Right.
What's the significance of that detail?
Those bowls represent the prayers of the saints.
Okay.
It's like a direct connection between heaven and earth.
I see.
The prayers of God's people are being presented before him, prompting his action,
Okay.
and it ties directly to the events that follow in Revelation, especially the judgment that's coming.
Okay, so we've got the lamb, he's been given the scroll, and now the whole of heaven erupts in praise.
Yes.
It starts with the elders and these amazing creatures,
Right.
then it expands to the angels, and eventually it's like the entire universe is worshiping.
Yeah.
What's the significance of all this praise?
Yeah, why is it such a big deal?
Why is it such a big deal?
This is one of the most powerful passages in Revelation when it comes to understanding who Jesus really is
Okay.
in a monotheistic faith like Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Only God is worthy of worship. But here, the Lamb receives the same worship as God on the throne.
Okay.
This is one of the strongest arguments for Christ's divinity in the New Testament.
Wow, I see what you mean.
Yeah,
That's a pretty bold statement.
it is.
It really is.
And there's another fascinating layer to this whole scene, is that the elders and creatures sing a new song.
Okay.
And this isn't just like a fresh tune.
Right.
It symbolizes the beginning of a new creation
Okay.
through Christ's sacrifice. It's like a sneak peek at the very end of Revelation,
Okay.
where everything is made new.
It's like this incredible promise woven into the story,
Right.
reminding us that even amidst judgment, there's this hope for renewal.
Exactly. And
Yeah.
this connects to another major theme, the new Exodus.
Okay.
So the lamb's blood purchases people from every nation and tribe, creates a kingdom of priests, just like when God freed the Israelites from Egypt.
Okay.
And so the focus shifts from a national Israel to a global, a
What?
multi-ethnic people of God,
Okay.
united by faith in Christ.
Right.
This idea of God's kingdom embracing all nations is a thread that runs throughout Revelation.
Yeah, that's a powerful image, especially in a world that's still struggling so much with divisions,
Yeah.
between people and nations.
Right.
It's like a vision of unity and inclusion that transcends all those boundaries.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's a vision that's rooted in the sacrifice of the Lamb.
So that sets the scene then for chapter 6,
Oh,
right?
yes.
Where things start getting pretty intense here on Earth.
That's right. Chapter 6 is where we shift from heaven to earth.
Okay.
As the Lamb opens the seals on the scroll, we start seeing judgments unfolding.
Okay.
But there's a catch. Only 6 seals are opened in this chapter.
Why the cliffhanger?
Yeah, why not
Yeah.
just unleash everything at
Right.
once? Well, think about it this way. That seventh seal, is like a pause for breath.
Okay.
A moment of anticipation before things get even more intense.
Right.
And it's reserved for chapter 8. And it really creates this sense of suspense.
Okay. I can feel the tension building already.
Yeah.
So what happens when those first 6 seals are broken?
The first 4 unleash the famous 4 horsemen.
Okay.
Each riding a horse of a different color. White, red, black, and pale.
Mm-hmm.
They represent conquest, war, famine, and death.
Okay.
Forces that have plagued humanity throughout history.
Those are some pretty heavy-hitting symbols.
They are.
What do you think the takeaway is for someone hearing this today?
Yeah.
You know, it feels relevant to so much of what we see, you know, happening on the news.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The 4 horsemen aren't just these abstract symbols.
Right.
They represent the consequences of rejecting God.
Okay.
You know, the chaos that unfolds when we turn away from him.
Okay.
And you think about it, you know, conquest, war, famine, and disease.
Yeah.
These are still realities in our world today.
It's like these ancient symbols are suddenly very real and very present.
They are.
Yeah, it's a stark warning, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And then we come to the 6th seal.
Okay.
Which is even more dramatic. Earthquakes, the sun and moon going dark, stars falling.
Right.
It paints a picture of this cosmic upheaval.
It feels like the end of the world.
Yeah.
It's terrifying, to be honest. Is that what it's describing, the literal end?
Chapter 6 certainly brings us to the brink of final judgment.
Okay.
But remember, Revelation continues.
Right.
This suggests that there might be cyclical or repeating themes.
Right.
These layers of judgment unfolding.
Okay.
So the 6th seal might represent a climax within one cycle, but not necessarily the absolute end.
So it's not a straightforward timeline.
Right.
You know, like this happened, then boom, it's over.
Exactly. Revelation offers different perspectives on God's judgment through the seals, trumpets, and bowls.
Okay.
And these might unfold chronologically, or they might represent different layers of meaning and intensity, revealing the complexity of God's plan.
So it's less about a literal timeline,
right,
and more about understanding these different dimensions of God's judgment.
Yeah.
It's multi-layered. Which I guess makes sense, considering how complex these themes are.
Mm-hmm.
What I keep coming back to is those 4 horsemen.
Yeah.
Is Revelation saying that all those terrible things are a direct result of humanity rejecting God?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that idea.
That's a really important question.
Yeah.
And it's one that many people wrestle with.
Right.
It challenges us to think about the relationship between human choices.
Right.
And the state of the world, about the consequences of turning away from God.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the text itself doesn't offer simple answers.
Right.
It invites us to wrestle with these difficult questions,
right,
to grapple with the complexities of good and evil judgment and mercy.
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe,
yeah,
in wrestling with these questions, we start to see our own role,
right,
in bringing about a better world, a world that reflects the peace and justice of God's kingdom.
That's a powerful thought. It's not about blaming humanity for everything that goes wrong.
Right.
But about recognizing our responsibility to work towards a better future.
Exactly.
To align ourselves with God's purposes.
That's right.
And that brings us back to the idea of worthiness, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we started this whole conversation talking about who is worthy to open the scroll.
Right.
Perhaps that question isn't just about Jesus, but about us as well.
I think you're onto something there.
Yeah.
Perhaps Revelation is challenging us to consider what it means to be worthy.
Right.
Not in the sense of, you know, earning God's favor,
right,
but in the sense of aligning ourselves with his purposes.
Okay.
Of reflecting his character in the world.
That's definitely something to ponder.
Yeah.
We've covered a lot of ground in chapter 5 and the first part of chapter 6.
We have.
And I feel like we've only just scratched the surface.
There's so much more to explore.
Yeah.
And that's what we'll be diving into in the next part of our deep dive.
Stay tuned, everyone, because we're just getting started.
That's right. Welcome back. So, last time we left off with those really intense images from the 6th seal, you know, the cosmic upheaval, that sense of impending judgment.
Yeah, it was heavy stuff.
It was.
But Revelation isn't just about, you know, doom and gloom, right?
Where?
There's hope there, too.
Absolutely. It offers hope and points toward God's ultimate victory.
So where do we go from that cliffhanger at the end of chapter 6?
Well, chapter 7 is often called an interlude.
Okay.
But it's more than just a pause.
Right.
It gives us this really crucial context for understanding the judgments that we've seen and the ones that are still to come.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Tell me more about this interlude.
Well, it starts with a vision of angels holding back the four winds of the earth.
Okay.
It's like hitting the pause button on God's judgment to allow time for a certain group of people to be marked with a seal on their foreheads.
A divine pause button.
Mm.
I love that visual.
Yeah.
Who are these people being marked?
That's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
It's 144,000 people from all the tribes of Israel.
Okay.
Now, there's a lot of debate over whether this number is literal or symbolic.
Right. I can see how that would be a pointed debate.
Yeah. Some folks get hung up on the specifics.
Right.
But I think there's a bigger point here.
What do you think is the bigger point?
Well, the number 12 often represents completeness or perfection in the Bible.
Okay.
So 12 times 12,000 could symbolize the fullness of God's people.
Hope.
Both Jew and Gentile being gathered into his kingdom.
I see.
It's a picture of God's faithfulness to his promises.
Okay.
Preserving a remnant of his people even amidst judgment.
So it's less about a head count.
Right.
And more about God's commitment to protecting those who are his.
Exactly.
Right.
And that idea is reinforced in the second part of chapter 7.
Okay.
John sees this enormous multitude from every nation, tribe, and language.
Okay.
Standing before God's throne, so vast it's impossible to count.
That definitely sounds symbolic.
It does.
So we've got these two groups, the 144,000 and this massive multitude. Are they connected?
They're definitely part of the same story.
Okay.
Both groups represent those who have been redeemed by the Lamb's blood.
Okay.
They've come through tribulation, but now they're experiencing the joy of being in God's presence.
It's a powerful contrast.
Yeah.
On the one hand, you have those facing judgment, and on the other, you have those finding refuge and blessing.
That contrast is key to understanding the purpose of God's judgment.
Okay.
It's not random or vengeful.
Right.
It's about refining and purifying his people, separating those who belong to him from those who reject him.
It's like separating the wheat from the chaff.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Chapter 7 gives us a glimpse of God's plan to gather a people for himself from every corner of the earth, a people who will inherit his eternal kingdom.
That's a message of hope amidst all this talk of judgment.
It is.
It is.
But we've got one seal left to open.
Right.
Where does the story go from here?
Yeah, where do we go?
Things get really intense in chapter 8.
Okay.
Remember that seventh seal?
Uh-huh.
When it's open, it unleashes judgments even more catastrophic than the ones we've seen so far.
Oh boy, here we go. What happens when that seventh seal is broken?
Silence!
For about half an hour.
Wow.
There's complete silence in heaven.
Okay.
A pregnant pause building anticipation for what's about to unfold.
That's such a powerful storytelling technique.
It is.
You can feel that tension building.
You can, and then the silence is shattered.
Okay.
Seven angels appear with seven trumpets.
Oh.
Each trumpet blast signals a new judgment on the earth.
Right.
Targeting specific aspects of creation and humanity.
So these trumpet judgments are a whole new level of intensity.
Think of it as an escalation.
Yeah.
The seals were more localized and symbolic.
Right.
The trumpets have a global impact, much more devastating.
Okay, can you give me some examples?
Sure.
What kind of judgments are we talking about?
Well, the first trumpet brings hail and fire mixed with blood, scorching a third of the earth's vegetation.
Okay.
The second trumpet hits the sea, turning a third of it into blood, killing a third of the sea creatures.
That's apocalyptic. What about the other trumpets?
The third brings a star called Wormwood that poisons a third of the earth's fresh water. The fourth strikes the sun, moon, and stars, darkening a third of them, and it intensifies from there.
This is heavy stuff.
Yeah.
What's the overall message here?
Yeah.
What is the author trying to convey with these trumpet judgments?
Well, I think there are a few key takeaways. First, it shows the consequences of rejecting God.
Okay.
These judgments are a stark reminder that rebellion against him leads to destruction and chaos.
It's like a cosmic wake-up call.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Second, the trumpets highlight God's power and sovereignty over all creation.
Okay.
He controls the elements, the heavens, even the very fabric of reality.
So it's a display of his judgment and his power.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And third, the trumpets are a warning to those still on the fence.
Okay.
Urging them to repent and turn to God before it's too late.
It's like a final plea for humanity.
It is. But this imagery, it's so intense.
It is. Some people might hear this and think, well, if God is this powerful and this willing to judge, maybe it's better to just avoid him altogether.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
Yeah.
It's easy to get caught up in the fear and the judgment and miss the bigger picture.
Right.
Remember, even amidst these judgments, God is still reaching out to humanity, offering a way back to him.
Right.
The seals and trumpets are warnings.
Right.
But they're also invitations to turn away from sin and embrace his mercy.
It's like that saying, God's judgment is always his strange work.
Yeah.
He doesn't delight in punishing people. He desires their restoration.
Exactly. And that tension between judgment and mercy is woven throughout Revelation. Mm-hmm. It's not an either or proposition. It's both.
Right.
And God is just and he will judge sin.
Right.
But he's also merciful and he longs for his people to return to him.
That makes me think of those two groups we talked about earlier, the 144,000 and that massive multitude.
Right.
They represent those who have found refuge in God, even in the midst of judgment.
Yeah.
Their presence reminds us that there's always hope.
Absolutely.
Even in the darkest moments.
And that sense of hope continues to build as we move into chapter 9.
Okay.
Where we encounter even more terrifying creatures and judgments.
Okay.
But remember, even in the midst of those terrifying images,
yeah,
there are these glimmers of hope.
Okay.
These reminders of God's ultimate plan for redemption.
I'm holding on to that hope, but I have to ask, what about those terrifying creatures you mentioned? What's lurking in chapter 9?
Well, before we get to those creatures,
okay,
there's an important introduction at the beginning of chapter 9.
Okay.
An angel with a little scroll.
Okay.
This angel represents a message of hope in the midst of all this judgment.
So there's still light in the darkness.
Always. Revelation is ultimately a story of victory, even though the journey is tough.
Okay.
This angel's message prepares us for what's coming and reminds us that God is in control, even when things seem chaotic.
Okay, I'm definitely clinging to that reminder.
Yeah.
But what about those terrifying creatures?
All right, so the fifth trumpet unleashes a plague of locusts from the abyss.
Locusts?
Not ordinary locusts, mind you.
Yep.
They're described with scorpion tails and human-like faces.
That sounds like something straight out of a nightmare.
It does. What do these locusts do?
Yeah. What do?
They have the power to torment those who don't have the seal of God on their foreheads. Their sting is excruciating, and it lasts for 5 months.
So the targeted attack on those who haven't chosen to follow God.
Exactly. And it gets worse with the sixth trumpet. An army of 200 million horsemen is released from the Euphrates River, each with the power to kill a third of humanity.
200 million? That's almost unfathomable. What do these horsemen represent?
There's a lot of debate about their symbolic meaning. Some see them as demonic forces. Others connect them to historical events like the Parthian invasion.
So it could be a combination of supernatural and historical forces?
That's what makes Revelation so fascinating. It blends those elements, making it relevant across generations. But regardless of their exact identity, the horsemen signify the destructive power of sin and rebellion.
Okay.
The power that ultimately leads to death and devastation.
So the sixth trumpet brings us to the brink of annihilation. Is this the end? Does humanity stand a chance?
That's the question that hangs in the air as we approach that final trumpet judgment. And that's where we'll pick up in the next part of our deep dive. Buckle up. It's going to be an intense ride.
All right. So we're back and facing that final trumpet judgment.
Yeah.
I have to admit, after those last two chapters, I'm a little nervous about what's next.
It's understandable to feel that way. The seventh trumpet is a really pivotal moment in Revelation. It's the climax of God's judgment and the beginning of his ultimate victory.
So it's both an ending and a beginning.
Yeah.
It seems like a very Revelation kind of thing.
It does. Does it? So when that seventh angel sounds his trumpet,
okay,
there are these loud voices in heaven proclaiming, "The kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Messiah, and he will reign forever and ever."
Wow, that gives me chills. So this is it. The fulfillment of God's promise to establish his kingdom on earth.
Exactly. The seventh trumpet marks a transition from the old order to the new.
Okay.
It's a time of judgment, but also a time of celebration. The 24 elders fall down before God,
right,
giving thanks for his righteous judgment and for his faithfulness to his promises.
It's like a cosmic changing of the guard.
Yeah.
The old powers are overthrown and God's reign is finally established.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
But there's more. We're then given a glimpse into the heavenly temple.
Okay.
Where we see the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
Symbolizing God's presence and his covenant with his people.
So even amidst all the chaos and judgment, God's presence and his faithfulness remain constant.
Absolutely. That's a message we need to hold on to, especially when things feel turbulent in our own lives.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But the seventh trumpet also brings more upheaval.
Oh, no.
Lightning rumblings, thunder, an earthquake, a massive hailstorm.
It seems like there's still some turmoil even after God's kingdom is established. Why is that?
Because the battle isn't quite over.
Okay.
We still have to confront the forces of evil that have been opposing God's plan all along.
Okay.
The rest of Revelation is about that final showdown.
Right.
Between God and Satan, between good and evil.
So there's still this epic battle brewing, what happens next?
We shift gears and move into a new section of Revelation,
okay,
which focuses on the rise and fall of two figures, the beast and the false prophet.
Who are these characters and what role do they play?
The beast is this terrifying creature that comes out of the sea.
Okay.
It embodies the power and deception of Satan.
Right.
The dragon, who we understand as Satan, gives the beast authority to rule the earth and demand worship.
So it's like Satan's puppet ruler trying to take God's place.
Exactly. And the false prophet is this deceptive figure who performs signs and wonders to trick people into worshiping the beast.
It's like a twisted parody of God's power and authority.
That's a good way to see it. So together, the beast and the false prophet form this powerful alliance.
Right.
Trying to control the world and lead people away from God.
That sounds disastrous. How does humanity respond to this unholy alliance?
Sadly, many are deceived and choose to follow the beast.
Okay.
Embracing its promises of power and prosperity.
Right.
They receive a mark on their right hand or forehead.
Right.
Symbolizing their allegiance.
So it's a choice, loyalty to God or allegiance to the beast.
With incredibly high stakes, those who choose the beast face eternal condemnation.
Right.
Those who stay faithful to God inherit his everlasting kingdom.
It's the ultimate loyalty test.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing God's people don't just sit back and watch this unfold.
You're right. We're introduced to a new group.
Okay.
The 144,000 who have been sealed by God and stand as witnesses against the beast.
Okay.
They represent those who remain faithful even when facing persecution and death.
So they're like the resistance fighters.
Yeah.
Standing up to the beast's tyranny.
That's a great analogy. They're a beacon of hope in a world consumed by darkness.
Right.
Proclaiming God's truth and resisting the beast's lies.
That's incredibly courageous, but I can't imagine this conflict ending peacefully.
You're right. Revelation culminates in a final battle.
Okay.
Armageddon, where the forces of good and evil clash.
It's the final showdown. Who wins?
God, of course.
Okay, good.
The beast and the false prophet are defeated and thrown into the lake of fire,
yeah,
a symbol of eternal destruction.
Right.
Satan is bound for 1,000 years,
okay,
which stops him from deceiving the nations any longer.
So evil is finally defeated and God's reign is fully established.
Yes. And with Satan's influence gone, a new era begins, the millennial kingdom, where Christ reigns on earth with his followers.
This is the happy ending we've been waiting for. What's it like during this millennial kingdom?
It's a time of peace, justice, and righteousness.
Wow.
The curse of sin is lifted and creation is restored to its original beauty.
Okay.
Those who are martyred for their faith are resurrected and reign with Christ.
It sounds like a glimpse of heaven on earth.
It's a taste of the ultimate reality that awaits God's people.
Okay.
The new heaven and the new earth, where God will dwell with humanity forever.
Wow. That's an amazing vision of hope and restoration.
It is.
But hold on, before we get to that final destination.
Yeah.
What happens after the 1,000 years are up?
Unfortunately, the story isn't quite over.
Oh.
After the 1,000 years, Satan is released for a short time,
yeah,
and deceives the nations again, gathering a massive army to rebel against God.
Another rebellion. Does humanity fall for his lies again?
This rebellion is short-lived. Thankfully, God intervenes, sending fire from heaven to destroy Satan's army. Satan is then thrown into the lake of fire, where he suffers eternal torment.
So evil is finally and completely defeated. What happens then?
Then comes the final judgment. All humanity is judged according to their deeds. Those whose names aren't written in the book of life are cast into the lake of fire.
Okay.
But those who remain faithful to God enter the eternal city, the New Jerusalem.
This is the culmination of all history. What's it like in the New Jerusalem?
It's a place of unimaginable beauty and glory, where God's presence fills everything. There's no more pain, sorrow, or death. It's perfect joy and fellowship with God and all those who have been redeemed.
That's the ultimate happily ever after.
It is.
What an incredible journey through Revelation. It's been intense with twists and turns, but ultimately a message of hope and triumph.
It is. Revelation is a complex and challenging book.
Yeah.
But it offers a powerful message of God's sovereignty, his judgment against evil, and his ultimate victory over all that opposes him.
What stands out to you from all of this as you reflect on these chapters? How do the themes of worthiness, sacrifice, and judgment connect to your own understanding of faith and the world we live in?
That's a question each of us has to wrestle with.
Yeah.
Revelation doesn't give us easy answers, but it invites us to grapple with these profound truths.
Right.
Perhaps the key takeaway is that even in the midst of chaos and darkness, God is at work bringing about his ultimate plan of redemption. His victory is assured, and he invites us to be a part of it.
It's a powerful thought to end on. Thanks for joining us on this epic deep dive into Revelation. Until next time, keep seeking truth and keep the conversation going.